Monday night, and that means it's a brand new episode of Graphic Policy Radio, the show that mixes comics and politics. This is the show for folks who are as excited for the new Congress and what that might mean, especially all the crossovers and big giant crises that are ahead. DC should be having fun with the new Congress. And as always, I am joined by Alana. How you doing?
Hi, hello. We were actually just chatting on Twitter with one of my favorite writers about politics and pop culture, Jamal Bowie. So, who was asking about tracking women who are writing and doing marketing and stuff like that, working in the comics industry. I'm curious to hear what his story is going to be and looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, not to go off on the tangent on it. So the basic question is, anyone track how many women actually work on books? And I know there's a couple sites that work on, like, the writers, focus on writers and artists, but not necessarily the editors. So I asked for more clarification because I think that's actually an important, something that generally gets overlooked a lot.
Definitely.
Yeah, especially, I mean, we were just talking that some editors have a hell of a lot of power when it comes to, like, creating the book. So it's a pity.
And others are, like, you know, just more like, not administrative, but they're not. It's less creative and more managerial in some cases.
Yeah, yeah. And
I feel like in the cases where it's not really creative, it does not count at all as, like, being something that's contributing to the artistic representations of characters in those comics. It's an incredibly important role, but it's not the same thing as saying they're contributing towards, like, what the content is in the same way, like, a showrunner on a TV series is. So, I don't know. I just don't want people to use that as an out to say, oh, look at all these women working in comics, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a case-by-case basis, but it's a good question. I don't think anyone really has the solid number. I would guess even the publishers probably don't have a solid number.
True, true. Oh, but this does bring me to just a little side thing I wanted to let our listeners know about. Earlier last week, I was invited to be a special guest host on a certain podcast about the Song of Ice and Fire book series, a.k.a. Game of Thrones, and a.k.a. Game of Thrones TV show. And I'll just throw it out. Like, you know, I am interested. Brett, I imagine you're probably interested. If, like, we'll do a guest spot if you guys have a podcast that, you know, covers things that we're interested in. You know, I think that we are growing in our strengths as critics and as podcasters specifically, and we are perhaps available to make guest appearances on other people's shows if you're interested.
Yes, absolutely. I remember I talked Sopa and Pippa a long time ago, but I think that was about it. So who knows?
Yeah,
that's all coming up again. So fun times.
So, yeah, I guess, you know, let us know what you're working on, and maybe we'll show up if you think it makes sense for us. And I also have, I was quoted for a piece that's going to be on IO9 next week, which I'll send a link around for folks when that happens, which I'm excited about as well.
Absolutely. Cool.
Yeah.
So we actually, go ahead. Sorry.
No, so I guess I just sort of feel like, I'm feeling like I'm a real commentator now. It's fancy.
I think the strangest thing was I was at a show, it was like years ago when no one read the site, and I went up to some creator, and he's like, oh, I totally know the site, and I was like, no, you don't. You're just being nice. He goes, no, and then he like threw out the tagline, and I just looked at him and go, oh, so you're the one reader.
Even to people recognize this.
Yeah, even to this day, I still don't believe it when people are like, oh, no, I totally read the site. And I'm like, no, you don't.
Yeah, people do. I mean, I am still always, you know, pleased when I hear someone's a listener. It's not like we're not Nerdist, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it is always great to hear that folks are listening and appreciating your podcast and reading the blog. So
Yeah, absolutely.
We're still new enough to be excited and enthralled by your attention. I'll put it there. I'm not faded yet.
No, not quite. There's some days, but not every day. It's the day when everyone else gets the scoop and the special thing and we don't, and I just bang my head against the wall. But that's a whole other thing. It's because I don't kiss ass.
Yes.
So we actually got a packed show. We're talking two new comics, plus some big announcements from Image. So we're going to talk the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, the only character who's beaten both Thanos and Dr. Doom. It is Squirrel Girl. Who got her own series. After that is we're going to talk Operation Sin, which also debuted last week from Marvel, coinciding with Agent Carter. It's almost like Marvel has their act down when it comes to cross-promoting and synergy and stuff like that. And then finally, Image Expo. Image had something like 25 announcements during their convention or whatever you want to call it, expo, mini-convention, whatever, last week. And it's a whole bunch of new series that pretty much lays out what you can expect from them in 2015 and beyond. And there's some really, really cool series announced. So I guess let's start with Squirrel Girl.
Yeah,
I don't. So how I'm trying not to. I want to set up the character for everyone so they have an idea. So Squirrel Girl has always been a C-list, D-list character. She's always been in the background. She literally has powers over squirrels. She talks to squirrels. She dresses like a squirrel. Lately, she was the nanny for a couple of the Avengers, but she is very much a cult character that people love. And literally, she has beat Thanos and Dr. Doom, and I'm pretty sure is the only character to have done that to both of them.
And she's been a babysitter for Luke Cage.
Yes. And I loved that part of it.
A pretty important thing.
Yes.
And depending on whose continuity you're following, she at least at one point dated Wolverine, which since she's in college in this comic book now makes me throw up, so let's pretend that never happened. Wiping away.
Yeah.
Any memory of that.
But
yes, she's a storied character. A Great Lakes Avenger, if I'm not mistaken, as well. One that's been used for great comic and empathy in the series before.
Yeah. Fun character. I mean, she's always been one that has entertained in various ways, but she's never been in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
But now she is. Marvel has had a habit of launching a lot of new series lately, seeing what sticks. A large portion of them have featured women, and Squirrel Girl is one of two this past week that pretty much are headlined by women, showing how much things have changed. So first off, I guess, what did you just think of the series?
Well, I'm a sucker for Erica Henderson's art. I actually like to think I was an early identifier of her talent when purchasing a commission from her a few years ago at Comic-Con. I had her do a wedding gift for a couple of friends of mine. I had each of their favorite Doctors Who and companion meeting the other Doctors Who and companion, because she's actually a Doctor Who fan herself. And I saw all of her adorable pinups of male superhero characters from DC. I don't know if you're familiar with this series, but she did a series of postcards of male pinups, including, I believe, Blue Beetle doing the dishes. Rawr. I really liked her style. She was cartoony, I mean, it is cartoony, but incredibly well executed. And it's the kind of thing that's so much harder than it looks to do, right? And I think that this comic is like that in terms of the art. It is really well thought out. So many of the comic beats hit properly because of the storyboarding. And because of how the panels break down. And so her art really carries that. And I think that the character design for Squirrel Girl is just, it could not be more perfect than it is. It's exactly right. And the, writing by Ryan North, if folks probably recall, he's the guy who has been writing Adventure Time which is one of the most popular all-ages comics titles around, but also a very, you know, wacky and bizarre comic, a little bit surreal and zany, and much in line with the TV show. And he is bringing back to Squirrel Girl as well. I love that he's continuing his secret hidden messages in the margins here. Did you happen to spot those, Brett?
Yeah, the really hard to read text on the bottom.
I have some friends who have actually did not notice them in Adventure Time, so I'm hopefully more people will notice them in Squirrel Girl. But I like that that tradition has continued. It's really funny and great editorial commentary. Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. It's a funny comic, and it's well-made comic.
Yeah, I mean, it's one that I had no idea what to expect going into it, like what type of style. I mean, we know Ryan North. We've had Ryan North on the show. We're both familiar with his writing style and some of the stuff he's done in the past, but, you know, what he would do with Marvel, again, is, I think, who knew? And it's really, I think, just, it was funny. Like, it's the best way of describing it. It was a good amount of humor. It didn't take itself too serious. It kind of played off of them. I mean, let's face it, she controls squirrels. It's kind of a goofy character to begin with. And he ran with it. And, yeah, the age is a little odd now that she's in college, but we're just going to overlook that.
And also it makes sense, like, if she was older than this, it would have to be a completely different book, you know?
Yeah.
I think de-aging her, you know, or pretending she's a new character is just fine by me, just fine by me. Most of the people seeing this on the shelves aren't going to have any idea about any of that anyway. They're just going to see a comic book cover of a young woman who looks like she's having a lot of fun. And that's something that I think comic fans could appreciate more of in their superhero fare. One of the things I'm just trying to sort out is she crazy or is she quirky? And I guess the line between that is hard to say, you know? But she really can talk to squirrels. She really does have some sort of superpowers. I don't think this is, like, all in her head or anything.
It would be kind of awesome if it was.
Yeah, exactly. But how much did you love that opening sequence of her singing the Squirrel Girl song?
So I think the highlight, and just sets it right off, is her, as she's kind of doing her thing, has her own theme song to the theme of the old Spider-Man theme song, and I loved it. Like, to me, that was a fantastic opening, exactly what I would kind of hope for. Hilarious, just really, really funny.
I mean, and it scans pretty well, you know. Squirrel girl, she's a human and also a squirrel. Can she climb up a tree? Yes, she can easily. I mean, like, it's like they worked on that. And it rhymes. And it makes sense and it follows the action.
Love to know how much work that they went in on that one. Yeah, I mean, it's one where you can kind of tell that this series is, I mean, the one vibe I got from it, it was very geared towards the Tumblr set, which is a bad thing. Like, it was very much, and it seems like, audience in mind, which is great. Like, you're going for an audience. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's, I think, the only thing. It was like, it just seemed like they had something in mind of what they wanted to do, and they went for it, and I think succeeded pretty well. Like, I easily see Squirrel Girl becoming a pretty popular hit on Tumblr. I just wonder what the Squirrel Girl fans will be named. We got Carol Core. I don't know what the Kamala Khan ones.
The
question
know.
Would be.
Oh,
what is?
Yeah, what is a Squirrel Girl fan club now? What are the Squirrel Girlites going to be?
Yes.
Oh, I'll also say that I think the colorist is really good on this.
Yeah, you know, the thing that kind of stood out for as far as the art, it continues that whole the Marvel thing of, like, really changing things up and trying things as far as art. There is no Marvel standard anymore.
Yeah. I think that's good, you know. I think we've talked about why we think that's a benefit for the line before. Yeah, I'm hope the sales are good for real, because I'd like to see these creators continue to be able to do work in the Marvel Universe. I think that there's a lot of cool things they could be doing. It was a good number one issue. It gives you all the background you need to know and the setting. Like, you could totally send this to somebody sight unseen. I like the collector's cards thing. That's hilarious. And it also fits in this. I mean, you know, we all had collector's cards growing up, right? The different hero series sets.
I think I still have mine somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, mine were actually my brother's, so I shouldn't say they were mine. But I read them thoroughly. It's definitely how I'm aware of the names of several 80s X-Men characters who I never actually read in any text before the days of Wikipedia. But I think it's a fun connection between fandom, you know, having the collector's cards and the story and giving the audience information. And, of course, she's going to be fighting Galactus coming up soon, which is exciting.
It's
the worst that can happen.
Yeah,
what?
I don't think she's taken Galactus on before, so this should be interesting.
Yeah.
She's fought Thanos. She's fought Dr. Doom. I think Galactus is a new one.
Mm-hmm. And also, I would just say, personally, as someone who's a huge fan just of Galactus's character design, really looking forward to seeing Erica Henderson doing more drawings of Galactus, because I think those will be really fun to look at.
Do you have images like I do of squirrels now, like running up and down glass and just covering them? For some reason, that makes
that's
me.
That's one approach. Yeah, I mean, that's possible.
It'll be interesting. It'll
that's
be
possible.
Fun. It's one. You know, I love the tippy toe and her roommate. Like that
the
was
roommate.
Another, like
mm-hmm.
really great touch of being like. That quirky college roommate where you kind of go in and you're like, oh, what am I going to deal with? And sure enough, she's got the weird one. Will be nice. The somewhat weird roommate.
She's like the right kind of weird. She's like a big knitting geek. I think that's going to be funny. I wonder if there'll be any particular heroic uses put forward towards from crochet and knitting for the purposes of this comic.
Yeah, and I mean, there seems to be a hint of a possible, like, romantic thing. I mean, she kind of bumped into
a
person.
Oh, yeah, that guy is definitely into her. That guy, his name escapes me.
Yeah. And there were some nice jokes about the character as a whole, where she's like, I'm tucking my tail in the back, which makes me look like I just got a big rear end, which I thought was really, really funny, because my whole thing was like, how is she going to hide the tail? So the fact that was addressed really early, I thought was entertaining.
Yeah. There's still some comic book physics in there, you know, but it's cute and hilarious.
Yeah. It's a nice, cute touch that I think, like, went with the tone of the series as a whole, where it was just very tongue-in-cheek and having some fun, and the way she dealt with Kraven and all that. It was nice. Like, it was a cute comic. It has a similar tone to a lot of what Ryan North has done in the past. So, cross my fingers.
Yeah. Fans of Adventure Time comics should absolutely pick this up. Like, absolutely. If you like the Adventure Time comic, you should absolutely pick this up, even if you have no idea about Marvel, really.
Yeah, and it kind of, you know, I'm pretty sure North did Midas Flesh for Boombox as well. And the tone of that, the two remind me a lot of each other. Yeah, he also did Midas Flesh, which featured, you know, two kick-ass women and a dinosaur in a spacesuit. So the tone wise, I think it was very close to Midas Flesh. So for folks who haven't checked out that series, I highly recommend it. But it was good. I think Agreement, nice thumbs up. Well done. Yeah.
Yeah.
On from here. So next up is Operation Sin. Yeah, so this will take a little bit of explaining. So for folks who have seen the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there was a character named Peggy Carter who was in the first Captain America film and was old in the older version in the second Captain America film. She is kind of, and she was in some shorts as well. So she's getting spun off into her own series, both on television and in comics. So on television, you've got Agent Carter, which debuted last Tuesday and with a back-to-back episode, 2 hours, that basically follows up post-Captain America, where she gets brought into doing some undercover operations and some stuff with Howard Stark. Operation Sin is the comic version of that, doing some sort of retconning, I guess you can call it, in a way. Where she also gets pulled into an operation with Howard Stark. It's called Synergy. What a shock. Both by Marvel, of course. So I think that's kind of where we're at with both of them. I don't know if there's any more to explain.
Here's where the synergy isn't.
Yes.
My brother was reading our promo for the show tonight, and he said, there's a comic about Agent Carter. You know, my brother is a huge Marvel fan, but he doesn't, like, read the comics press, you know. So he doesn't always know when something new is coming. But he watched Agent Carter's show, loves it, thinks it's, like, the shit. But when I said, oh, yeah, it's called Operation Sin, he's like, what? Why isn't it called Agent Carter? To which I reply, exactly. Why isn't it called Agent Carter? Does Marvel not think that people are going to buy a comic with a woman's name in the lead? Instead, they're going to call it, like, a name that connects to one of their much maligned, because nobody gives a fuck about it, crossover events that, like, doesn't even make sense outside of that context. I just think that it was a bad choice. You know, people love Agent Carter. I think that even before the show launched, Marvel knew they were going to have a hit on their hands. Marvel should have called the comic Agent Carter. And then maybe my brother would have known that there was a comic he could buy about Agent Carter.
That's my question as well. I would think that there's some logic why they didn't call it Agent Carter. I'm doing a little bit of Googling to see if there was ever an Agent Carter comic series like before, because maybe that would be an excuse as to why.
No, they just would do another room and rename it. But if they really wanted synergy,
obviously. Well, I'm saying like someone else did Agent Carter. Someone else other than Marvel. Google is failing me on this one.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that's about all I can think of. You know, unless there was another comic series out there by some other publisher called Agent Carter, I don't know why you wouldn't call it that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like this would be a better way to get people to buy the book. And it would be great if they'd advertise it on the show, but that's too much to ask, apparently.
That's a big question I've got. You would think of a nice, if you like the show, check out the comic in stores tomorrow. Would have been smart, maybe.
Yes. Would have gone a long way. Because I have to tell you, everybody loves Agent Carter. The show is wonderful. We actually are going to have a deeper dive on the show in an upcoming episode very soon, so I don't want to go too much into that today, but the show is fantastic. It's the best superhero show on television. I think it's probably the best superhero show since Batman the Animated Series, which is saying a lot, because I love a lot of the cartoons.
I was about to say, that's saying a hell of a lot.
Yeah, because I love Young Justice so much, and Justice Unlimited. But this might be the best superhero thing on TV since Batman the Animated Series.
Really? More? You like it more than Flash?
I haven't been watching Flash.
Yeah. Well, me. I like it a lot. I think. So my issue with the show, and we're going to talk more about it later, so I don't want to go too much into it. I just think the acting's a little flat at times.
Really?
But I like the show. Yeah,
no, I didn't feel that way at all.
So some of it felt like people were like, I'm doing a period piece, so I'm kind of like overly forcing the period piece vibe to it. But not everyone. She is fantastic. Like, she is absolutely fantastic. but that would be my only minor issue with the show.
I thought the cast surrounding her was very strong, so I guess we'll have to have a showdown about this in the near future.
I'm going to have to go remember the characters' names and point them out. So far it seems everyone really likes it. Like, it's gotten really well reviewed. Rarely do you see critics and fans actually enjoying it. I think the show didn't do quite fantastic as it probably should have in ratings, but...
Really? Huh.
Yeah, if I remember right, it did slightly worse than the S.H.I.E.L.D. finale, so it didn't quite carry over S.H.I.E.L.D. fans.
That's weird.
Well, so that's...
This is so much better. I mean, everybody I know, like, was saying, this is so much better than S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, it was a much stronger debut than S.H.I.E.L.D. So my thing is, like, maybe the fact that it's, you know, quote-unquote a period piece makes it a bit more difficult for people to, like, really fall into it and like.
I disagree. I think people prefer period pieces because everyone's better dressed.
I do love the outfit.
Stylish.
I will give you that in about, yeah, there's no argument on that one. It's all about, if I could have Howard Stark's closet in 2 seconds, I would wear those suits,
you would,
like,
totally
every day.
Rock that. Yeah, you would probably rock that.
If I could afford it, I would.
Yeah. So, I really do feel like the comic... So this is the point of what I was going to say, though.
Sorry.
So I'm liking the comic. I kind of wish we were waiting to talk about it till later because I think it needs more time to develop. But I didn't quite put my finger on it until I was telling my brother about the comic today. Gap between how good the show is and how good the comic is immense. Like, the comic is fine, and it does a couple of things well. And the comic certainly has room, I think, to become very good, sure. But the issue one, I'm not sitting here, like, with bated breath, you know, anticipating issue two the way I am about the TV show. You know, I can't wait to watch the next episode or tomorrow. That's just going to be amazing. But with the comic, I'll probably forget it that it's coming out until it shows up in my box.
So here's the question about the comic, and this was the issue I had with it. I felt the plot was too close to the TV show.
There's definitely some similarities in there.
There's a couple scenes, and there's, like, a couple actions, like... how her and Stark kind of get together.
Absolutely is the same.
Yeah, and, like, what happens in her apartment. I'm trying not to spoil it for folks. Next week we can spoil stuff or whenever we talk about the show.
It's not that it's, like, a point-by-point thing, but the narrative structure is the same. Absolutely.
Right, and I think that's my issue with it. If you just had the show... It would be, you know, fantastic. If you just had the comic without the show, I think we read the comic and be like, okay, it's cool. You know, we'll see what the next issue is like. But the two together, there's the issue in that they're, I think, way too similar.
Yeah. I think it's true. And they're not even taking place at the same time as each other. So that's weirder even. The same thing would be happening with her relationship with Howard Stark, but like it's like a three or four year difference between when it happens. But that's okay that the comic continuity and the TV/movie continuity aren't the same. I just sort of seem weird to me that they would be sort of staggered then. I don't know. In terms of the comic's time and setting, like the book really, you know, establishes itself around a specific year. Basically has to be 1951 based on the Rosenberg's trial information that's there. One little historical touch is it just kills me. I mean, it's entirely in character that Peggy Carter is like, you know, saying that, like, is condemning the Rosenbergs. But just to me as someone who, like, is a student of history, I'm sort of like, oh, like, this is going to be, like, the only thing that people who read this comic are ever going to hear about the Rosenbergs. And it's really not an adequate explanation of what happened to them and how they were demonized. And so that kind of killed me a little bit. But it's completely in character, you know, so I can't even criticize it.
Yeah, I mean, it. That was something I saw as well, and it stood out to me a little bit, and I was like, all right, that's interesting. But in as far as the character goes, I would think the character would be pretty, like, gung-ho, anti-communist, especially from, like, what her position was and where she came from.
Yeah,
no,
exactly. But also, yeah. Like, you kind of would be like, you'd think maybe she'd be smart enough to be like, those weren't really, if those were spies, they weren't doing a good job of it.
I mean, based on her old position, you'd think she would probably know a bit more about them.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. But it's good that the comic is, like, grounding itself in that level of historical detail.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, it's the small little details that I think are going to kind of make it stand out for some folks. For me, I really want to see what she does. Like, I'm more fascinated to see how this all fits into Marvel continuity. And I think the other issue I had with the problem I had with the first issue is the folks that attack her. I thought their gear was a bit too advanced for.
Oh, absolutely! It was completely out of time. I think that the historical setting is not done anywhere near as strongly in the comic. There are some good costuming touches in it, like her pants in the later scene are, like, perfect. But I feel like there is certain art detail that's missing. But more important to me, I think the artist choice for this book isn't the right artist choice. They should have really gone for somebody with a more retro style. The covers are wonderful. And I understand that they don't have the budget or time to do painted interiors, but they really could have gone for either a more Golden Age comics look or a more magazine illustration style that would be evocative of the time period. I think that the art just doesn't match. And that said, you know, they could have gone for some, like, you know, I don't know, Greg Land or type or some guy with, like, draws people with tiny feet. You know, they could have done a lot worse. Like, I guess I should applaud them for at least they didn't, like, choose somebody who's drawing in the Marvel House style of 1990, because then I would die. But I don't think the artist is the right pick for this book. It's just that it's not as bad as it could have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as the art, it almost reminds me of some of, like, when Marvel has the big events and they have 26 offshoot books, and there's always those couple books that, like, the art isn't quite as solid as everything else. And you can tell it was just like, we need someone to do this. The art kind of has that vibe to it. And for a series that is so high profile, or at least should be high profile.
Should be, yeah.
Yeah, that's the other thing that kind of stuck out to me. It's interesting. I think it will be how this plays out in the long run will be fascinating to whether or not this was, like, an afterthought or this is actually, like, something Marvel really wants to push and make happen, to steal something from Mean Girls to make happen.
Yeah, I really feel like it could have gone with a different artist on this. I'll have to think about who. But, I mean, Phil Noda would have really aced this, I think.
Yeah, that would be a good one. I'm trying to think who else would have been really, I know you said Greg Land-ish, but we have our issues with Greg Land. Who would be a really, really good style that has, like, a retro vibe to it? I can't think of...
It's a style that a lot of people who are skillful, if they have time to do it, could ape.
Yeah.
But there aren't a lot of artists who really do, like, a throwback Golden Age style.
Yeah. And this, you kind of also need someone who, you also need someone who, like, knows that era.
Yeah.
So the other thing that stood out, have you read S.H.I.E.L.D. at all? Not the new series, but there was, like, the Jonathan Hickman series that seems to be missing its sixth issue. So this had, like, this weird mythos about S.H.I.E.L.D. and how it was formed, and I still can't tell if it is in Marvel continuity or not, but how that plays into all this, too, if it plays into all this, I don't know. It's a little strange. We'll see. Yeah. So I think we're kind of both on the wait and see on this one.
Yeah, definitely wait and see. I feel like I want to come back to it when we've had a little bit more time to develop. There's a few good beats in it. Like, I really like how, you know, Peggy has her bit about telling Stark he should pay his secretary more. That was a nice touch. So there are some nice beats there, but there's a lot that I think we still need to wait and see.
Yeah. And I mean, we're going to talk more about the TV show, but to me, that's one of the best things of the TV show is the constant beating of the misogyny and all that crap that she has to deal with. I think that it's weird to say, but that's my favorite part of the show. I think it's just such a great touch to it and so fantastic to see. I wish there was actually more of that in the comic. I mean, when we were talking about, the comic's so much like the show, that was something that was actually missing.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's not dealing with bosses in this, so she's not dealing with a million microaggressions every minute. But.
Yeah, I mean, there was the comment about the secretary. There's some stuff in Russia. I think there might have been a comment or two that could have been good, but that was about it.
Yeah. My favorite sequence actually in the comic was when you see her handler and how her handler comes on. I don't want to give it away, but that I think was the best bit of the comic.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm privy to the secretary. I thought the secretary scene is really funny. But yeah, so on to Image Expo next.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we all know that there's huge conventions like San Diego Comic-Con and all the Wizard World and New York Comic-Con. Well, Image has decided to kind of put the spotlight on themselves with a get-together at the beginning of the year called Image Expo. This is, I think, the second year that they've done it. But Image Expo, basically, they get some of their best of the best and put them together on the stage and talk about what is going to be coming out in the next year or so. So, like, this is the point that you're going to be able to see what's going to be coming out from Image. So instead of getting not covered because everyone is covering the latest comic movie news coming out of San Diego, Image has decided to carve their own little niche, which is fantastic and really smart marketing. So, like, bravo to them. I think it takes place in LA-ish, but anyone can go. They actually are very opening to press. And I think you can pay like $50 and you go. You get all kinds of exclusives. You can meet creators. It's a really cool convention if you are a hardcore Image fan. So think of it if you know that exists. But they have announced 25... They had 25 announcements. Some of them were new creators on old series, at least one of them, but I think 24 out of the 25 are new series that will be coming out. So I don't know if you want to just kind of go through the new series and...
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so we're just going to go alphabetical order straight from the Image website. First up is AD After Death, which is Scott Snyder, Jeff Lemire. It will be set in the near future where death has been cured and one man must come to grip with what's next. Interesting. Not interesting.
Yeah, I forgot. If you told me it was good, I'd check it out.
Fair enough. So Scott Snyder's Jeff Lemire, two fantastic creators. My only issue with it is I'm pretty sure there's another series that's out that's really, really similar to that Boom's doing called Eternal. So, yeah. Black Road, Brian Woods, we loved his massive It's his first project since The Massive, which is weird because I thought he had something coming out from Dark Horse, but whatever. He's returning to Viking Age, and the series follows Magnus the Black, a fixer for Christian Church who loses a Roman official of the bandits on the infamous Black Road. Heading north to fix the problem, complete his contract, he uncovers a secret, something so big it threatens to change the balance of power in all of Europe, but with one foot in the world of pagans and the other in that of Church, who can trust where his loyalties lie? It's Brian Wood and Gary Brown.
I don't know if I'm supposed to be reading Brian Wood now. That's where I came on that, you know what I mean?
Yep, I'm with you. And there was a thread, on Facebook with a bunch of creators that had that exact same question, and I still don't know the answer. There, I don't think there is a right.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, this isn't like Roman Polanski or anything, but it's still not okay, and I still feel like his response was inadequate.
Yeah, absolutely. Take him out of the equation. Sound interesting? Not interesting?
It could be interesting. Yeah.
It's different.
It's a moment. It's a historic moment that I think is an interesting one. Periodically, I go through periods of time where I think about that.
And he did Northlanders, which was a Viking comic, and that was
Everybody loved it, from what I read.
Yeah. So it sounds interesting. He seems to be really into like the historical stuff now. I think he's doing something for Dark Horse based off of the Revolutionary War or something like that. I need to go back and look. For some reason, that sticks in my mind, which sounds cool. But again, I'm with you. I'm like, I don't know what to do. Up next, I Hate Fairyland. It's Scotty Young and Jean-Francois Bellu. I'm sure I'm butchering that name. It features a character named Gertrude, a snarky, slightly deranged 4-year-old with a 40-year-old with a battle axe, who happens to be trapped in a Shirley Temple-esque body and confined to the Technicolor fun world that is Fairyland.
And they say that it's supposed to be for fans of Invader Zim. I don't know. I feel like I've heard this premise before. I'm actually not a fan of Scotty Young's art at all.
Really?
It's like ugly American failed chibi or something.
Yeah, I could see that.
So, not for me.
All right. I mean, it's an interesting premise. My thing is, like, there's a point we've come Fairyland out. Like, there's so many twisted fairy tale series right now. I mean, hell, Xenoscope is an entire publisher that does that.
Yep. So, I agree.
All right, next we have Heaven. This is by James Robinson and Philip Tan, and it's a space opera called Heaven. Heaven introduces readers to a distant future where the forces of man and alien combined have used religion to conquer this universe and are now ready about to invade the next one, Heaven itself. The good war between man and angel will span galaxies and dimensions, building to a final conflict that threatens to negate all of reality itself, along with the way many players on both sides of the war will be featured, soldiers, spies, politicians, all with different goals and agendas, even as their two distinct and differing realities explode around them.
So, I loved, and this is going back to something I probably read in high school, I loved, assuming this is the same Robinson, I loved Golden Age. I think it's one of the most underrated graphic novels ever. So I kind of want to give it a chance. Do you know if this is the same James Robinson?
I don't know Golden Age.
Ooh, it's really good. It's a DC Elseworlds title about the Golden Age heroes and were things really so clear-cut as they seemed at the time? Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of superheroes, etc.
Cover looks cool.
Yeah, it's really freaking good. So that's compelling. Meanwhile, there's tons of things done that I haven't even looked at, but that does kind of make me want to check it out. I think the art is really going to be a big determiner of whether or not this sort of a story appeals to me. I'm not sure if I know this artist's work. I'll have to take a look.
Philip Tan.
What do you think?
Tan's working for, I remember it was pretty decent from Uncanny X-Men and Spawn, like, I think always looks cool. The premise sounds interesting. Again, it kind of goes with the whole I Hate Fairyland. There's tons of stuff of, like, angels versus Earth.
Yeah.
The idea of using religion to conquer the universe and then invade heaven seems like a nice spin. But, like, the whole concept almost seems to be too grand. And I think that's my fear. Like, the pitch is going to be bigger than the actual result.
Execution, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But
see.
It sounds cool. And my guess is it's probably the same James Robinson that you're thinking of.
People's parents need to get more creative, though, when it comes to naming their children. It's getting hard. Island and Eight House.
Yes. So Island and Eight House. So Eight House, I'm positive, has been announced before, so but we're going to still count that one. So it's collaborations between Emma Rios and Brandon Graham. Supposed to be coming out in 2015. Island is a collaboration spearheaded by Rios and Graham. Features a murderer's row of most interesting artists in comics, and that's a monthly comic magazine. Both of them, I think, are basically like anthologies from what I remember the original pitch of Eight House was. I want to say, I mean, shit, I'll just look on the site while we're talking right now. Eight House was announced a while ago, maybe at San Diego last year. And it's just making an appearance. Yes. Image, no, that would be the Image Expo. Okay, maybe I'm just imagining this. I swear. Oh, no, I'm right. Image Expo 2014. It was announced. So it's been a year in making. So Eight House, it's Graham teaming up with four different creators to bring a science fiction fantasy miniseries. And then the other one, Island, is a magazine that he's doing with a whole bunch of creators, which could be cool.
Yeah, it seems really ambitious, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a discussion with someone else. It's like, I just don't think there's enough really cool anthologies out there. Like, to me, Image would be a little different, but for, like, DC and Marvel, I would be funding anthology even if I'm losing money on the anthology, just because it gives me a platform to try new writers and artists and see, like, what hits and what doesn't as far as characters and all that stuff. Like, I would be fighting for an anthology every time. You know, unless I was losing tens of thousands of dollars, I'd be willing to take a bit of a hit. So,
yeah, such an opportunity for talent development.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. Obviously, with any anthology, it comes down to who's doing it.
I feel like the British have a stronger tradition for that, than we. Well, I feel like I know that the British have a stronger tradition of that than we do. So
yeah,
I'm curious to see what we end up with.
I mean, I just finished up. I think it's called Meanwhile. Yeah, you know, yeah. Meanwhile number 2, which is out from Soaring Penguin, I think. And it's another British anthology that I think is like really solid, great series that's out there, not Image, but, yeah, a prime example of British doing awesome anthologies.
Yeah.
Up next is Captura. I think that's how we pronounce it. Basically the big thing you need to know, it's Chip Zdarsky doing what Chip Zdarsky does. The series follows Keith Kanga, a young bioengineer flung across the universe onto a strange planet filled with weird danger, and he doesn't get home. Then Earth, the place where you live, is doomed. So Zdarsky, for those who don't know, does Sex Criminals and will be doing Howard the Duck. As they joke, he also does much unpublished poetry. could be the weirdest series that comes out of this.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a big fan of his work on Sex Criminals. So
the joke, I don't know how much you paid attention. The joke they were doing at the convention when they were like asking Zdarsky what the series is like, he goes, "It's Gay Saga." Like, that was his answer.
Yeah, that intrigued me, actually. Hearing that makes me more interested.
Yeah. It's one, like, with him, who knows if he's full of shit and he's just joking or he's serious. I don't know. But we'll find out.
I'd like to think he's being serious, deadly serious.
I would hope. Because him doing that could be, like, hilarious, beyond hilarious.
Yeah, I could get behind that.
So, up next, so this one I'm sure you and I are both really looking forward to, The Ludocrats, which is Kieran Gillen and David LaFuente, Jim Rosengol, and Ricardo Venasio. It's a decade-in-the-making opulent fantastical comedy. It has hyperbole as its baseline, considers the impossible as an aim only fitting for underachievers. It'll change your life. Not setting up the bar too high. Primarily by letting you own a comic called The Ludocrats, where Baron Otto von Subberton and Professor Hades Zero K are glass defenders of a ludicrous aristocracy against the insipid forces of normalization.
Yeah, I think that's going to be incredible.
If there are two comics on here that I saw the list and could predict what your reaction was, that was one of them, and the other one will be coming up soon.
Indeed, I think it is. But yeah, I obviously, you know, I pretty much will read anything that Kieran works on. This premise sounds amazing and fun and topical.
Yeah.
Because the aristocrats are quite ludicrous.
Yes.
So, yes, the insipid forces of normalization may also be worth critiquing. And Kieran can do these, like, weird things where you acknowledge all of this. So, I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm super excited.
I am hoping for an aristocrat's actual joke in the comic at some place.
Oh, but we'll... possibly.
Or the comic itself will be one giant aristocrat's joke, which I can see him doing. Up next, Monstrous. So this is Marjorie Liu, who herself is a fascinating creator, and Sana Takeda. They're teaming up for an all-new ongoing fantastic adventure set in an alternate 1900s Asia. Readers are transported in early 1900s, where immense leviathans roam the earth, wielding unimaginable powers that many have long desired to exploit. When teenage girl's mysterious past forms a tenuous psychic bond with the most dangerous of all leviathans, she becomes the target of both human and otherworldly authorities, who will stop at nothing to possess her, to control her, and to control the lord of all the leviathans. What they don't count on is the courage of the girl herself, and the fact she is slowly becoming more than human.
Love it! I mean, even if I wasn't a huge fan of Marjorie Liu, this pitch still sounds amazing. What a cool setting and opportunity to, like, look at a different point of history turned into fantasy. You know, mm-hmm. There's no reason why fantasy has to always be in the same exact kind of setting. I think that this world building that they're going to be having in there is going to be really fantastic, and a lot of great opportunity for great visuals. And I read this description and I know that I have girlfriends who I can get into this. So I'm incredibly excited about this book.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. Again, like I said it before, so for folks who don't know about Marjorie Liu, why I think, she's a fantastic writer and she's written a whole bunch of books. But for folks who don't know how amazing she is, her background is she majored in East Asian languages and cultures, mired in biomedical ethics. She has a law degree. She worked at Foreign Agricultural Service at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing, and now she writes comics.
So we're pretty sure she's actually a superhero in disguise.
Yes. I'm going to go, she's the female Charles Soule, where she's just has this amazing background and done all kinds of crazy stuff and writes comics.
Oh, and she writes romance novels. Like,
yep,
what?
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I think her work is fantastic, and this just sounds like a really exciting premise.
Yeah, I mean, there's been hints that she was going to hop over to Image for quite a while. So, obviously, she is. All right, up next, No Mercy. This is Alex DeCampi, Carla Speed McNeil, and Jen Manley Lee. It was a trip before college, build schools in a Central American village, get to know some of the other freshmen. What could go wrong? After tragedy strikes, these once privileged American teens must find their way home in a cruel landscape that at best doesn't like them and at worst actively wants to kill them. No phones, no passports, no mercy.
So this could go one of two ways. This could either be awesome or awful. And it'll necessarily either be awesome or awful. I look forward to finding out which.
Yep. I have a feeling you and I will be discussing this one. It could either be really fascinating or a horrible Eli Roth movie.
But it could be like a really gore. It could be like a really good exploitation film that also brings up a lot of political, sociopolitical issues, right? Like there has to be a critique of this whole like voluntourism that really just like is about white people feeling good about themselves and doesn't create any lasting change in the countries people are visiting and like just is giving people a little pat on the back without actually improving life for the people in the country. Like,
and
there's room for a comic that looks at that, for real.
Yeah. And my hope is the fact that they've highlighted once-privileged American teens makes me think that that is on their mind.
Yeah, I think it is.
So we'll see. I mean, it really obviously comes down to the story itself, but it's one of the more intriguing ones, I think, out of this entire list when it comes to new ideas and something different. Up next, Paper Girls, Brian K. Vaughan with Cliff Chang. Paper Girls is a story of four 12-year-old newspaper delivery girls who experience something extraordinary one day.
Yeah, that could be a lot of fun. Obviously, he's an incredibly talented creator, some of the most talented people out there, and Cliff Chang is a great artist. I suspect this will be a great book.
Yeah, I mean, it's
probably an all-ages title, too, right? Wouldn't you think?
I would think so. I mean, it doesn't say, but I'm assuming. I mean, it's fascinating how many of these series... I mean, we'll talk about it at the end. I was going to say, it's fascinating how many of these series have female leads or female creators. It seems like they've almost gone out of their way to make this happen. After much criticism last year. So this and the next one, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that you're probably going to be pretty excited for it, but you never know. New Phonogram by Karen Gillan and Jane McKelvey. And I believe this is the last chapter.
Yes, and we've been waiting for this for years. So this is really exciting news. I actually wasn't sure when they were going to get around to finish this, since this project was sort of sidetracked by Wicked Plus the Divine, which I'm fine with, because Wicked Plus the Divine is the greatest shit ever. But it's exciting that Phonogram will be out and there's a publishing date, and I identify a lot with the characters and his stories here. Like, this is like such a comic like about me and my people, so I'm really looking forward to reading it.
And I'm sure we will be discussing it when it comes out, so something to look forward to.
Yeah, yeah. I really hope we can get Karen back on the show in spite of all the crazy time differences.
Yeah, we'll go out our way to make sure that happens, make it happen. Next is Plutona. Jeff Lemire, who is obviously doing another series with Scott Snyder, artist Emmy Lennox, and Jordi Belair, who's like the colorist extraordinaire. The story is the nature of friendship and line between good and evil. Follow the story of five suburban kids who make a shocking discovery while exploring the woods one day after school, the body of the world's greatest superhero, Plutona, laying dead among the mud and grass. Kind of sounds like a Stephen King film story to me. Like,
I was
going to
say that. Or like Echo, this could be really good, but I don't know.
Jeff Lemire is a fantastic writer, so, knock on wood, I think it's going to be good, but to me it just sounds like Stand By Me with a superhero. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
I mean, out of all Stephen King, Stand By Me is up there as far as one of my favorites, so. It'll be interesting to see. Up next, Pretty Deadly. New volume of Pretty Deadly is coming out. This one having to deal with World War I, I believe.
You know, an interesting thing I've noticed about Kelly Sue DeConnick is that when she does these runs on series, she likes to really change up the genre, you know, every now and then within the same series. Like with Captain Marvel, it's been, you don't like this particular arc, wait till the next one. It'll be completely different. I feel like this could be a similar thing. You know, this setting is so different from the earlier one. It follows it in terms of history, but there's still like a big time gap happening there. I think that it's interesting that she just, you know, she definitely wants to move, keep the story moving forward, going to a different time and place. So I think it's an interesting idea. I'll certainly be reading it regardless, since the first one was so good.
Yeah, not something I really thought about the time jumping. But yeah, I mean, it kind of fits the some of what she did with Captain Marvel. Like, fits really well as far as that time jump. The first volume was great, so I'm going to guess the next is probably going to be just as good. We've got Revengeance, which is Darwin Cook coming to Image. It's a psychological thriller with darkly humorous overtones. When Joe Malarkey is faced with a criminal tragedy, he sets out to make things right on his own. What follows is Joe's odyssey through the underside of the city and the madness that seems to drive his crazy world.
Sounds like it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, Darwin Cook. I mean, if I'm thinking of like a noir thing, like I love his work on Parker, so the Parker stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in. Like that's.
Yeah, he knows his way around this genre. He really knows his way around the genre. So.
Yeah, Run, Love, Kill. This one follows a wanted woman in hiding named Rain Oshiro. Narrative style will be prominently featured. Two different but slightly significantly connected moments throughout her life, the past, which will explore her history as an impressionable student, an abiding soldier, and a wanted fugitive in the present, which will show her as she is now and how she copes with and runs away from decisions made in her past. It's an exploration of choices, both good and bad.
I don't know. That's like too much. I'll have to see it. Who knows?
Again, it's like the other one we talked about. It seems like a very ambitious, whether or not the actual end product meets the ambition is a whole other thing. Next, Savior. Todd McFarlane's launching a new series. Brian Holguin is co-writer. Clayton Crane is artist. A man with no background, no memory, no place to call home. But this much is clear. This individual possesses certain powers, abilities that harken from the Old Testament. Could he possibly be this corrupted world's savior in the flesh? Or will he be the world's undoing? A lot of religious stuff in these announcements. There's another one that's about to come up.
Mm.
I think it sort of has some religious overtones.
I'm not feeling it.
Okay, fair enough. Sons of the Devil, Brian Buccioletto and Tony Infante. It's a psychological horror story about one man's discovery of familial blood ties to a cult in Sons of Devil. Interesting. I mean, it sounds interesting.
There's the description that's trying to bring out connections between the True Detective and the Following.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, I feel like it's hard to make to say based on this pitch whether it would be any good or not. I can say that saying it's that it's like those two series is not enough for me to say, oh, I'm going to have to read this.
Right.
I think that there's a lot of interesting content you can be talking about there when it comes to cult leaders. So I think it could be good. I just think it's hard to say.
Fair enough.
I'm not familiar with the creators at all.
I'm trying to think of the series I just read last year for the Buccioletto, and I can't think of it. It came out from, can't even remember the publisher, like really small publisher. Clearly didn't really stick with me a whole lot. Okay, Spawn gets a new writer. We're going to skip that one. Starve.
I made a farting noise. Although speaking of which, we still have like amazing mint condition first run Spawn action figures we need to sell in our house. So if you're listening to this show and you really want to scream at me for having made a farting sound at Spawn, you should definitely send me a message on Twitter so I can sell your Spawn figures. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we could go on the whole toy collecting for a long time. I have no idea how those Spawn figures are doing. I just remember when they were coming out and buying those things by the cases. Because I worked at a store at the time and that's what we did. Starve, another Brian Wood series. This is with Danijel Zilge and Dave Stewart. It's set in the near future where celebrity chefs are idolized. Reality television has taken a decidedly unsavory turn.
I don't know. I mean, it brings up the whole Brian Wood question again, but for some reason,
right.
I have to see. I don't know. I'm not feeling it. I feel like it's It reminds me a bit of, golly, it was a couple of years ago, at least at this point. There was another sort of reality TV obsessed comic, like comic that was critiquing reality TV obsessed society. That was a few years back.
But
I think it was around
or
superhero
no?
powers. Yeah. No, on superhero powers, and it was like it was pretty disappointing. So maybe that left a bad taste on my mouth for that particular theme.
So mine is, there was a graphic novel that came out called Get Jiro or Get Hero that was done by Vertigo, I think, that sounded like a very similar concept about celebrity chefs, except that wasn't reality television. That was like them fighting the mob. yeah. Okay, so up next, Tadema. I guess that's how you pronounce it. Yeah. I wasn't there. I don't know. So this is Epi Lennox, who we mentioned before. It's her personal journey back to Japan and a touching and in-depth look at Japanese roots and cultural influences in a new graphic novel. So it's basically her travelogue and her memories of traveling to Japan as a kid and throughout life.
That's not just the kind of thing that I read, but, there's definitely an audience for it, and I'm excited that they're, a different kind of a story there.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually books that I love to read. Little shock that it's coming out from Image. It seems something that would be much more appropriate at First, Second, or Self-Made Hero. But, props to Image for kind of branching out and doing that sort of book, so good on them. I will read it. I will absolutely read it because I love those type of books. This one kind of sounds awesome. I'm completely psyched. It's Brian K. Vaughan and Steve Scroci, and the series is called We Stand on Guard. It's an action-packed military thriller set in the 22nd century. The series follows a heroic band of Canadian civilians turned freedom fighters who take up arms against a violent invasion of their country by a technologically superior nation, the United States of America.
I love it. It's
so on board.
Yeah, absolutely. I love to see this. Is Brian K. Vaughan Canadian?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I kind of hope he is. I feel like I want more room for a culturally specific Canadian perspective on our relationships with each other. And
no, he's another Cleveland person.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Well, so he's going to be appropriating the voice of people from a different culture and nation and writing this book. I don't know. But I do love the concept. I just hope he spent a lot of time talking with Canadians about the cultural aspects of this. I've spent a lot of time working with Canadians, actually, and I love hearing their perspective about how our countries are different. I think it's incredibly interesting, sensitive, and informative. So I would love to see somebody exploring this, and I think it sounds like a lot of fun.
It's Robot Jocks with Canada versus the U.S. I'm fucking in. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's a great concept. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, so there is there's another graphic novel, and I'm trying to look up what the title of it is. And unfortunately, I'm not bringing it up. So the series is has to do with the U.S. and Canada, and basically it is the U.S. and Canada have kind of merged into one giant, super nation, and there is some of Mexico's in there as well, and it follows basically freedom fighters from Canada who are kind of sick of it and kind of want to overthrow the Canadian, or this, not the Canadian, but this government that has formed. It was really cool. I dug it a lot. So I'll be fascinated to see, how close that is to it, if it is any close to it. It sounds cool. There's giant robots fighting each other. There's no way it can be bad. That alone will keep me entertained. So that kind of wraps up all the Image books. Out of everything, kind of what has stood out to you as far as their announcements, and which ones are you like looking forward to the most?
I mean, Phonogram, of course, Ludocrats, and Marjorie Liu's book. I mean, Monstera. I'm going to butcher the name. Those, I think, are the most exciting things I've heard about so far. Paper Girls sounds pretty darn cool too.
Yeah,
but yeah, there's interesting stuff in there.
So the big thing to me is a lot of female creators and a lot of series with female leads.
Yes.
Which is something for those...
But I think if you counted it out, it still would be a minority of them, just that it would be a goodly number.
Yeah, it's still... and it's a lot of the same people over and over again. Emmy Lennox was on a few series. Jeff Lemire is on a few series. Brian K. Vaughan's got two. Brian Wood's got two. So a lot of the creators are doing multiple stuff, which is fine. It's cool. Emma Rios is obviously on a few things. But, you know, one of the big things from last year was... Image being criticized for the fact that they didn't have any women on the stage. So the fact that they have changed so much, have shifted so much in a year, I think is like really, it's a good sign. Like it's clearly they heard and kind of worked on it.
Yeah, I think so. And diverse subject matter, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, and I think that's Image's strong point, really kicking off last year, was the series that they've been putting out is so diverse and so varied. There literally is something for everyone, which is something a lot of other publishers don't do. And they're continuing it. I mean, we've got stories about little girls, we've got giant robots. We've got stuff in the future, stuff in the past, multiple series of people fighting heaven. And hell, even a historical series in Black Road. Like really something for everyone, which is cool. It's great to see.
Yeah, I think it's a real leader in the industry right now, without a doubt.
Yeah. If nothing else, I'm positive that they will they'll continue to gain market share. I mean, if these just the announcement alone is any indication, I mean, they ended the year in double digits market share. I can't see how they don't expand and gain more with that sort of lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool announcements, some really cool stuff. We'll wait and see. I mean, I'm sure we'll be talking about a lot of this as it comes out. So, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait for the first stuff to hit. So, should be a fun, fantastic 2015, if this is any indication. If nothing else, it puts a gauntlet down that everyone else is going to have to catch up to.
Yes. Yes, yes.
So, at a minimum, hopefully some other folks will start shifting and forced to put out some original stuff that might get us excited as this. Anything else you can think of before we kind of wrap up the episode?
Oof, well, I wanted to sort of talk a bit about X Factor, but...
Oh, yeah, shit, sorry.
Did you have a chance to...
Yes, I'm all caught up. So, yeah, let's talk X Factor. Sorry. Totally forgot about that.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what the hell is going on right now in the book, to be honest. It's getting pulled in a lot of different directions. I'll tell you that when the comic mentioned they're in the old city, my immediate response was, oh, they're in Puerto Rico, they're in Old San Juan, right? And that wasn't what they meant at all. It seems to be a euphemism for Israel. I'm sorry, and then being in Jerusalem. And then I'm like, why wouldn't you just call it Jerusalem rather than having people who live in New York City and therefore think about Puerto Rico a lot, think that you're talking about Old San Juan. It was a weird choice. I don't know. I expect better of the series, and I don't know why you would euphemize that. And it feels like this whole, like, plot line with the Destroyer coming back and not wanting to have peace, it feels a little bit like it's politics as written by a junior high student.
The city reference I thought was really odd, especially from Peter David, who tends to not be afraid of pulling, you know, doesn't usually pull punches.
And Marvel has always used in real places names as opposed to DC.
So that being mentioned, I thought was really odd, but it seemed like the whole point of the story was to just get this, like, to get that end game going. Like, clearly we know the head of Sorvel is probably a bad guy and there's something up with him. So now the question is, what is it? And yeah, I mean, to me, it just felt like we had to do this just to try to get to that point of the story.
Yeah, I really kind of wanted to have the revelation about Serval be a little earlier. And I'm glad that he can get it in before the book gets canceled, at least, because to me that seems like the whole point. I wouldn't be surprised if the next issue is a lot better, to be honest, because we're going to start getting some bigger reveals about what all that means.
Yeah, so my big thing is I thought the series was really on a roll pre-Access, and then it got thrown into this event, and like all the momentum just got killed. Like, it had some great stuff with Quicksilver and him admitting how much of a shithead he is, and his relationship with his daughter and ex-wife, and the fact that he's, you know, a half-brother to Lorna, and then that makes also Scarlet Witch her half-sister, and like all that stuff that I thought was really awesome and something I really thought was doing well and was fantastic. Like, I loved that focus, and I think it was something that was so underrated and not really discussed in all the other X-Men series. So the fact that someone was finally touching upon it, like, I loved it. And then Access happened, and like, you're just thrown into Access, and it sucked. Like, it just killed the wind and took all the wind out of the sails.
Yeah, Access fucks up everything.
Yeah, as a whole, it was a fucking horrible event. Whoever's planning Marvel events, please stop. Please stop.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, it was nice. And then there's like how they're dealing with Danger and her relationship and all that, and her like going from this really sweet person or robot, whatever you want to call it, to like this killing machine has been great too. So there's definitely bright spots. It's just like it keeps on getting the energy sucked out of it, which is frustrating beyond belief.
Yeah, so it's a good metaphor. Either the moisture getting sucked out of it or the energy getting sucked out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so can you answer that question? So the little girl that's with them now, Decay, she's like maybe a teen. Like, I picked her at like 13 or 14.
She's a young teen. I think she's like 15 years old probably.
Do you find it a little messed up that she's running around with the superhero?
Yes, okay. I do. I find it very messed up. And weird and out of character that they would have someone that young. I don't think they'd have someone that young running around with them.
It's a little weird. I'm outright going to say it's a little weird. Yeah. But other than that, like, I mean, we could probably do a whole other show. I mean, so my other thing was,
you know, I think one of the real pleasures of the book, sorry to just digress, has been I love the way Peter David writes Gambit.
Yeah. Yep.
He's just good at writing Gambit.
He seems to really get the character and like what that character's supposed to be. There's something, it's it's good. Like, it's I think one of the highlights. And I also kind of like how he is bringing how he's dealing with Quicksilver, and Quicksilver like realizing how much of a shit heel he's been and trying to finally make amends for all that.
Yeah. I love Quicksilver, and you know, I've been reading Peter David's Quicksilver my entire comics reading life, you know, so I'm always in it for that.
So, oh, you know how many issues are left? I think there's, whatever, we're on 19. I don't know what's going to. I think it's the next couple of months it's out, which is a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, I really love his, like, long, uninterrupted stream of writing he's been able to do. I hope to, you know, to see what he's going to be on next.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was, you know, he was one of the first comics writers I really spoke to me when I was first reading comics in junior high, so...
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those writers that has been, I mean, yeah, I mean, I was reading his stuff when I was in junior high, high school. I mean, I remember his runs on stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's, here's a hopefully, you know, hopefully he winds up somewhere that we'll be reading. Like, I'd love to see him take on, like, a little Hulk for a while. I think would be fun.
I don't really like Hulk books, but I would give it a shot for him.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a character that I think he's very attached to, and you kind of associate the two. So to maybe see him back to that, I think would be really nice. But who knows? Nothing else. I maybe we'll get a new X Factor down the road. Probably not.
I don't know, man. He's like the X Factor guy. It'll eventually come back to him again. I think he's going to have one of the longest runs on a single title that anyone is going to have done in the end of the day. I mean, he's going for a record.
yeah, it's one we've talked about before. I don't remember how long he's been writing in this series. So we've talked about going back and really figuring out how long he's been doing it, because it does seem like forever.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be a shame. I don't have any predictions as to where it's going to wind up. I have no idea how he's going to end it and what he's going to do. Like, I'm still not quite sure what the deal with Serval is.
Yeah. I think it's an evil corporation. I mean, that's what you do with, you know, that's what makes sense with the story, and it's an act, and we certainly know that Serval guy's not a nice person, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be surprising when the corporation, you know, does typical evil corporation stuff, but supervillain corporation things on top of it all. I'm curious to see what the reveal is. Yeah, I really do want to see the reveal.
Yeah, we'll find out. I mean, it's getting wrapped up relatively soon, so, and not too much longer to get the big surprise. So yeah, anything else on all new X Factor?
No, that's really it.
I think that wraps everything up. I'm sorry, I dropped the ball on X Factor. Totally forgot to include it in the schedule. That was
okay.
On me.
Yeah, we got it.
So I think that's everything. So that's going to be wrapping up another episode of Graphic Policy Radio. For those who are listening, I encourage you to check out the site Wednesday night for a brand new episode of Comics Extravaganza Live. I think they did really well in their first episode. They, you know, like us, a comic, general comic news, some comedy skits, just a nice coverage of stuff from a different point of view, which is always nice. Has a bunch of female geeks on it as well, showing off the diversity out there. So that's awesome to see. And other than that, you can catch us every single day at graphicpolicy.com. We've got a whole bunch of new contributors to the site, so So tons of original content coming out daily, and you can always follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I think that is all the plugs I've got right now. So as always, thanks for listening, and thank you, Alana, as always. It's been fun, and we'll definitely be back next week. It's a question of what we'll be discussing.
Yeah.
So until next.
Okay.
So until next time, I'm Brett.
And I'm Ilana.
And keep it geeky.